In the Wake of the Celtic Tiger is the title of a new publication from the Irish Bishop's Commission for Justice and Social Affairs, looking at the plight of the poor in Ireland in the context of the current global economic downturn. Against a backdrop of rising unemployment, increasing levels of personal debt, turmoil in the housing market, and a return to emigration, the report highlights the plight of the most marginalised, like the elderly, the disabled, the travellers and the rural poor, who benefited little, if at all, during the recent years of economic growth. Bishop Raymond Field heads the Commission for Justice and Social Affairs.
Our argument at the time was that while many, many people benefited during the boom years of the Celtic Tiger, there were also many who suffered as a result of it and who were poor. And as we did our thinking on this and reflection, the whole economic crisis began, and the financial crisis, and we sank further and deeper, I suppose, into marginalisation, so that now we're really second last at the bottom of the scale of European countries vis-a-vis our wealth and our response. So we issued this report, having reflected upon it in conjunction with the St. Vincent de Paul Society. We were very conscious too, actually, of Pope Benedict XVI's message for World Day of Peace in 2009, which he issued on the 1st of January this year, Fighting Poverty to Build Peace, where he said every form of externally imposed poverty has at its root a lack of respect for the transcendent dignity of the human person. Now, while he was concerned with world peace and the impact of globalization, he also acknowledged the many forms of poverty that exist in advanced wealthy societies, warning us that sooner or later, the distortions produced by unjust systems have to be paid for by everyone. Now, the Holy Father was so right, and here we are. We're paying for this at the very, very moment, as one of our banks has been nationalised, and job losses are increasing day by the day. Thousands of people lost their job. Unemployment figures are rising. People are in fear of losing their homes, and they're just paying their debts, paying their mortgages. So it is beginning to really bite in. And I think the Holy Father is right to bring us right back to having that respect for, as he said, the transcendent dignity of the human person. And as long as we ignore that, we're going to sink deeper and deeper into chaos and into poverty. And our argument is that we have to respect the human person, and that as governments try and shore up and respond to the financial crisis and the economic crisis, that they do not forget the human person. They do not forget the needs of the poor, and especially those who've been made poor by the recession.
Fine words and ambitious goals, but Bishop Field says the report also makes some very practical suggestions as to how governments and policymakers can translate these ideals into action.
We did get down to very, very practical details. While we said that the needs of the most vulnerable must not be ignored, we did suggest that a national development plan for people, which would ensure a basic standard of living and access to education and healthcare, by focusing on, as I quote, the development of human infrastructures in our community. That would be one thing. Certainly, we said that through taxation, the government could recoup from the private sector money that would help the poorer section. We also suggested that, and this came out very, very strong in our document, that there's need for a discussion both by government and generally around the common good. And that's one of the key messages in our document, that we look again at the common good of everyone. And if we begin to do that, we begin to address many of the gaps and the holes and the sufferings of people as a result of this slide into poverty.
Auxiliary Bishop Raymond Field of Dublin there, who heads the Bishop's Commission for Justice and Social Affairs.
So the report was attempting to suggest to the government what they might do in an effort to try and tackle these difficulties. And more importantly, I suppose, the main message that went out was saying, look, what you've got to ensure is that the people who benefit least during the period of the economic boom, indeed who in no way contribute to the current difficulties that the country is in, are not now the ones expected to carry the greatest share of the burden as we try to improve the economy of the country.
John Monaghan is National Vice President of the Irish St. Vincent de Paul Society, a Christian voluntary organisation founded in France in 1833 to provide a vital lifeline to the poorest and most vulnerable on the margins of society. John told Emma McCarthy more about the report and the hidden face of poverty in Ireland, as well as the kind of people who are seeking help from the organisation today.
Well, let me explain it this way to you. Back, we've just recently in the Vincent de Paul produced the report, our annual report for 2007, and that was a good year, and it showed that we spent 46 million. We estimate that last year, 2008, we would have spent over 50 million. And to give you some headline numbers, and then we'll talk about the people who come to the society looking for help, we had to spend over 5.3 million on food in 2007. We had to spend more than 3.5 million helping people with educational costs, and more than 3.5 million, again, helping people with fuel and energy bills. On top of that, we spent more than 7.8 million on general bills, just helping people cope. So they're headline issues. The greatest number, we've seen a huge increase in the number of calls for help over the past year, 2008, as the recession started to bite, and the largest single group of those would be families with children. And the items that they're looking for help most often with are food, fuel and heat, educational support, and general trying to cope and get by. So we're talking with families with children predominantly, but also older people, particularly those living alone, and then more recently, people who are often with great debt, who suddenly found that they've lost the job and are in no way accustomed to the kind of problems that we're now experiencing. It is not in their memory, whereas older people would have been through difficult times in Ireland. So they are the constituents. That's the kind of money we're currently spending.
John, as you pointed out there, so many of these people perhaps were calling for help now to the St. Vincent de Paul and other charitable organisations have no memory of poverty in Ireland. But poverty is no stranger to Ireland, and indeed the St. Vincent de Paul Society has long been working in Ireland. Can you just tell us, give us an example of the kind of work at a very basic level that St. Vincent de Paul does?
Right. Well, we have about 9,500 members spread throughout the 32 counties of Ireland. That's the entire Ireland, north and south. We have around about 1,300 branches or conferences, as we call them. About 1,000 of those are visiting people, members within those will be visiting people in their home. That would be the core work of the society, going to where people are, helping them and the first thing we bring isn't money, although that we have that with us. First thing we bring to people is friendship and support. And then we try to help people to move on from where they are, to become independent, to regain their confidence. And in doing that, we then, of course, need to help them meet their bills. So provide food, bring them clothing, help children get through school, help them get back into work. But the main thing, quite apart from the financial thing, really what we see ourselves doing is bringing the message of love and hope contained in the Gospels, the writings and teaching of Frederick Osnam and Vincent de Paul, and indeed the principles of Catholic social teaching. So they're the bedrock. That's, if you like, the spiritual fuel that we use in our work. And the other work that we do, quite apart from the visitation, we are running here in Ireland, we are running about 18 hostels for homeless people. So we take about 500 people every night off the streets. We have nearly 1,000 social housing units. These are housing units for people who couldn't normally afford a house. Many of them are older people. We have quite a few youth clubs. We have family resource centres scattered throughout the country in which we run courses. We help children and parents with educational courses and a variety of other events. We visit people in prisons. We visit asylum seekers and migrant workers. We work with people in hospitals. So there's a huge range of activity. Indeed, we would estimate that our members are spending on visitation between 350 and 400,000 visits a year. In a small country, and we're putting in between us more than 2 million free volunteering hours. So there's a lot of effort going in to try and help people. But again, to put that in perspective, we currently have nearly 300,000 people in Ireland, many of whom are children, who are living not only on very low incomes, but are deprived of basic necessities such as food, fuel, clothing, light, and so forth. And then around them again, there's nearly another 800,000 people who are deemed to be at risk of poverty. They're the people who wake up every morning hoping that the utility bill or the rent bill isn't going to be high this month, because if it is, they have a real struggle to pay for it. Hoping that a child doesn't come home from school with an invite to a birthday party, because there's no way the family can afford a birthday present for the child they're going to visit. And more importantly, there's no way that they could have a birthday party in their own home, which they might be expected to. An awful lot of people then living on the edge. And then, of course, the group we mentioned earlier, the people who are suddenly have lost the job. And the difference now between, you mentioned earlier times of struggle and poverty in Ireland, back in the late 80s, early 90s, when things were very bad with huge inflation, huge interest rates and high unemployment, at that stage, we had the safety valve of emigration. And now that the rest of the world is struggling, of course, that's no longer open to people in Ireland to go elsewhere looking for a job. But also back in the late 80s, early 90s, the level of personal debt was not as high. Whereas now, many of the people who are suddenly finding themselves out of work and who are really struggling to cope have huge personal debt, whether that be a mortgage for a home, a car that they've bought, a credit card, whatever. And they really are struggling. And I think the biggest concern we would have in the societies of Vincent de Paul is that we can continue to generate funds so that we can help those people, because we rely predominantly on donations from a very generous Irish public who themselves are struggling financially.
It is a huge organisational infrastructure that the St Vincent de Paul has up and running in Ireland. And as you said, it is completely reliant on charitable donations. How is the recession affecting you in that field, and how will you cope if you see a reduction in your donations?
Well, surprisingly enough, when we launched our annual appeal, which tends to take place around Christmas every year, we worried greatly that we would have a reduction in support. And indeed, I did a lot of radio interviews and television pieces, as did my other colleagues, around the time of the appeal. And we voiced this concern. And thankfully, the Irish public have been absolutely fantastic. The response to the appeal has been absolutely dramatic, and we've managed to get a lot more money than we thought. But I mentioned that we probably spent about 50 million in 2008. Our anticipation is that we might be anywhere between 55 to 60 million this year, and we are reliant. Our hope will be that the Irish public will continue to support. If they don't, obviously, then what we can give to people will be reduced. And that would be a great, great pity if that were the case, because sadly, all the indications are, and there's a meeting going on where the government, in meeting with the social partners, employers, trade unions and other groups, including the community and voluntary pillar, and they're looking at discussing cutbacks in public services. And the difficulty there, as I'm sure your listeners would know, is that most public services are taken up by people who tend to be, by and large, in need. So whether it's health or education or social welfare payments or whatever, social housing, they tend to be taken up predominantly by people who have difficulty coping and struggling on low incomes. And so if there's a cutback there, then even more people will come to us, and we could have this vicious circle where we don't have enough to give. That will be a real dilemma. Hopefully it won't get to that.
Taking it now perhaps to a more personal level, John, would you mind telling our listeners how you became involved in the St Vincent de Paul Society?
Well, I live in a parish in another county very close to Dublin, which is the capital of Ireland. I live in Kildare, in a place called Leixlip, and your listeners might know it as the home of Guinness. That's where Guinness was actually brewed 250 years ago for the first time. So I live in that, which is, certainly when I moved out, a semi-rural parish. And I've been a member of the society now for about 25 years. I go out visiting people in their homes, helping people try to cope, advocating on their behalf and dealing with local authorities and government offices to ensure that they get whatever entitlements they're doing. And that would be typical of many of the members. In my day job, I'm a professor of mechanical engineering in Trinity College in Dublin. I'm married. I have three grown-up children. I'm currently the national vice president, which means that quite apart from my normal Vincentian work of being an ordinary member of a conference, I am also tasked with responsibility, along with the other members of the board, in trying to run a very, very large organization with, as we mentioned there, 9,500 members, over 1,300 branches, lots of property that we use to help people over the country. So it is quite a daunting challenge. Having said that, I think what we're trying to do, as I mentioned earlier on, what we're really trying to do and what invigorates us is to try to live out that message of love and hope contained in the Gospels. And this is true of every member of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Ireland, to try and look at Catholic social teaching and try to see, is there any way that we can try to bring the story of the Beatitudes, the story, I suppose one way to describe it might be, a lot of our work might appear like the story of the Good Samaritan. Seeing somebody on the road, picking them up, and helping them to cope. But we take it a stage further. We have to ask the awkward question, both of government and other people here in Ireland, those who are well off, why was that person lying on the road in the first place? And more importantly, what is it that we can do to try and ensure that not so many people are left lying on the road in need? And so that's what inspires me. It's what inspires all the other members of the society. So it's very much a personal journey. It's a Vincentian vocation, and it's one that you find that every member of the society in Ireland, and indeed throughout the world, because the society is now to be found in all five continents and about 140 countries, and that's what inspires all of us.
Can you remember what was the very first, if there was just one thing, can you remember back to when you decided to become a member of the St. Vincent de Paul Society? Was there any one particular thing that inspired you to make this decision, or an acquaintance or a situation?
Yeah, it was very much been invited by a friend who was currently a member of the society. I suppose I always had an interest in social justice, but a friend of mine asked, would I go along and help with a Christmas party that the society in Leixlip were organising for the senior citizens, the older people in Leixlip. And I went along and I was struck by the gentleness and the kindness of the members of the society and the work that they were doing with the older people. And then, of course, in talking, I would, like everyone else in Ireland, was aware of the Vincent de Paul, and then becoming to realise that, look, I felt I could make a contribution. So it really was a case of, I suppose that was a tipping moment. It was being put in a situation, I suppose, as somebody once described, look, as a situation that comes about when preparation meets opportunity. I was already prepared to be involved in things, and an opportunity presented itself to do some work in this area, and I took it. And you find that very often that's what happens with many, many Vincentians. Someone says to them, would you mind helping with this? Listen, we've got a particular problem around education. You're a teacher. Would you help us to work with this young person? Or you know something about such and such. And then again, one of the great things that has come about in recent times is that when we've been explaining how difficult it is in Ireland, there has been a surge in people volunteering. That's fantastic. So for me, the tipping moment was way back in the early 80s, and it was just that call, if you like, to be of some service, and I took it from there.
You said there before that you've been working, you've been part of the St. Vincent de Paul Society for over 20 years. In the course of that 20 years, without naming names or giving specific details, is there only one story that for you symbolises the missionary charism of the St. Vincent de Paul Society and what it can do?
Well, I can think back to a family that I had to deal with back in the early 90s. And it was a difficult situation. It was a mother, father, two children. The children were in many ways brighter than the parents. And I'm putting that as politest. There were difficulties with the parents. One of the young people had a speech impediment, and I was able to work with him and indeed with colleagues, and we managed to get speech therapy. We ensured that they stayed, both the boy and the girl stayed in school, because there's always a danger of those circumstances that they will leave. And he stayed in school. He went on and he moved on to third level. He then qualified as an electrical engineer, and he's now moved out and broken that cycle of poverty. And I think if I'm proudest of anything, it probably is that. And that kind of story can be repeated time and time again by members. But for me, it comes to mind straight away. It is a situation that if you stick there for the long haul, it's not a matter of simply walking in one night, giving some euro and helping people pay an ESP bill, but it's being with people. That's what I mentioned earlier. It's the offering the friendship and the support. It's being with people to help them regain their confidence so that they can fulfill their potential. And for me, that, for that family, something that I feel happy about. I won't use the word proud, but I'm happy that that's happened, and I'm delighted that that family are now on a firm footing.
Thanks there to John Monaghan, National Vice President of the St Vincent de Paul Society in Ireland, talking to my colleague Emma McCarthy. And if you're interested in supporting the organisation in any way or contacting them for help, you can find them on the web. The Irish homepage is at www.svp.ie, with links to the organisation in other European countries.